Hello, West Liberty. You're listening to WGLZ. We are college radio and we are passionately vocal. I'm Peyton, and this is Distinctive Discussions, where we talk to different people that relate to whoever's currently hosting different fields. Today, I'm joined by Jared Thompson, an assistant professor for digital media design and a small business owner with his company, Thompson Video. Now, to start, I'm very interested in your video production slash editing work as someone trying to be an editor myself. Your video production business really interests me. I learned about it kind of this morning. What exactly do you do there?
Yeah, so I started with my small business back in 2005. So I guess 20 years ago, kind of crazy to think. I was in college at the time, and I just wanted to start making videos. And I actually worked with a professor at another institution I was at for my first year of college. And he asked me one day, he was like, do you want to go out and shoot a wedding video with me? And of course, I'm thinking a wedding video. Absolutely not. That doesn't sound fun to me at all. But I tried it and I realized there was a good return on it financially. And it actually wasn't that bad. And so I second shot some weddings with him, maybe three or four of them. And then one of my friends was getting married and was like, hey, do you want to do a wedding video for me solo? And I was like, yeah, sure. And so I had my own camera at that time. It was an old Sony FX1 camera that actually used the mini DV tapes. Mm-hmm. Have you seen those? You know, I'm talking about those.
Yeah.
So we actually, it wasn't solid state memory. It was recording little tapes. And from there, I started really enjoying it. I started getting some other clients. I worked for a local doctor that had a kid in college or in high school at the time, and they hired me to video different football games and track events and basketball games for them, and it just kind of built up from there. And then just slowly, gradually over time, adding more clients in and it getting out there, doing some shows like wedding trade shows and stuff to let people know what I did, and it took off.
Nice. With that business, do you take the video and then go and like edit it and like put it together, or is it more of just shooting it and then saying it over with that?
Yeah, so I've always been really focused on I always want to edit what I shoot. And, you know, there's different ways that you can go about doing that where you might just be an editor for a person or a company. Actually, right now, I've been doing some freelance editing for an agency that's kind of local here. And they send me different projects that they shoot, and then I edit them. But when it's stuff that I've shot, I always like to be the person to edit it. And I like that because if you are the person who is acquiring the footage or the assets and you know what happened when, you have a feel for how it was shot, I think it makes it a lot easier to edit. And that's been one of the challenges that I've faced throughout my career, is working on projects that somebody else has shot. Even whenever I hire a second shooter to work an event with me, like a wedding, you know, I know what I'm seeing through the lens the whole time. I don't know what they're seeing through the lens the whole time. So when it comes to that process and my workflow of putting it all together, it is a little bit more time consuming because you have to take time to go through and look at every second of what's shot. And and so, you know, you were in my Adobe editing class last spring, and that was one of the things we talked about with workflow, is you have to be familiar with your assets. And so I much prefer to, I guess long answer to this is, I much prefer to edit what I shoot and shoot what I'm going to edit.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that understanding kind of how camera work works and like you know, how to like properly shoot something with a camera helps a lot with that video editing like process, where you understand like even if you aren't the one actively shooting it, you understand kind of like the process of whoever was, and so that helps you kind of edit better with that.
100%. You know, I've worked on some footage that people have acquired that has not been great. And so I think it's really important to, I'm going to equate it to like driving a car, you know? If you know how to work on a car, you're going to drive a car better, because you're going to know what it takes to fix the issues that might arise from it. And if you know how to drive a car, like, you can figure out how to work on a car better. So it's kind of like it's interchangeable, you know. And I think if you know how to shoot and expose your video properly, you know how to use the tool properly, it will make you a better editor. And one of the things that I try to stress to my students is, especially on projects where they are acquiring their own assets and their own footage, is to always think of how you're going to edit. So from the time you hit record, or even before you hit record on your camera, think about what you're framing, think about what you're shooting, think about that exposure, think about composition, and build that timeline that you're editing in your mind ahead of time. And then when you go back to edit later, you've already kind of got that like image in your head of what you want this to look like, and it'll be, the workflow will just improve so much from that.
Do you think that it might be hard to think, but do you think there's a lot of people who do camera stuff that don't really actively think about that editing process and kind of just go with what they think looks good without thinking about, like, okay, how will this look when put together?
Yeah, I think that definitely happens a good bit. And I think it happens a lot in folks who only specialize in live production because they, even being like a technical director behind a video switcher or board, you have to be thinking of how those shots are going to be composed and fit together, right? But sometimes if you're only on a camera, if that's all you ever do is you're a camera person, you have trouble really thinking about the big picture of how that's all going to work together. And so I think everybody needs to be exposed to both sides of that. And even if from live production to creative work where you're shooting and editing later on, I think everybody needs to have that exposure to, you know, what it's like to take something that's shot and then put it together, because it does. It makes you a more well-rounded person. It makes you more creative, and you'll be a better storyteller, which I think is what video editing is all about.
Mm. I worked in Noise Violation, our music show, this semester, and the camera people we had were fantastic. They consistently got shots that would work well into the actual switcher, and that helped a lot when I had to work on the switcher, and it's hard giving, like, directions, like, shot after shot after shot live. And it made me realize how much I do like video editing, because it's like, okay, I can take my time with this. and switchers, I understand how to use a switcher, but oh my gosh, they can be a lot sometimes.
Listen, I used to work in live production, and like switching, TDing was my least favorite thing to do. I much prefer, and I love editing, so I love putting stuff together, but I love putting stuff together, like you said, when you have time to really think about it and kind of like, you know, play around with where you're going to put stuff. The live aspect of it is definitely, it's a whole thing. Some people are really good at it, and some people love it, and I just have never been one of those people that love TDing.
It's very interesting, because I went to the server because it was the most kind of like you are putting together like a playlist of videos that will play one after another. And that's the most that I kind of could think about, the most like I could get to editing without constantly technical directing, which I couldn't actively do with like. Oh, right. In the interview with Ellie Mathney earlier this year on the Trumpet, you said you were stepping back from that business to focusing on teaching. Mm-hmm. Do you still do a lot of production things both outside and inside of school?
Yeah, so I used to do maybe like between 10 and 15 weddings a year, a number of other events. I still do a couple dance recitals. I've had contracts with this one company for like 11 years now. And so like a lot of my like existing established clients, I still do work for, but I have definitely scaled back a lot. I don't do very many wedding videos anymore, just because of the amount of time it has to be required to go into it. I just feel like I don't have that. Like I said, I am still doing, I'm doing some freelance editing for an agency, and that kind of lets me keep my skills sharp, you know, and keep working. And especially whenever new updates come out on the software, because there's always constantly, there's new things that they throw in, there's things that they change, there's functions that they move, there's tools that they remove completely. And so I think being able to stay in practice of that is really important to me as an educator. And so even though most of my time right now is dedicated towards the education process, I still like to be a practitioner. I would like to be able to do it more. It's just it's tough.
Do you, because I know that you've made some stuff for West Liberty in the past, do you mm-hmm. still actively, like, make, I guess it's not entirely advertisements, but, like, video stuff for West Liberty and, like, putting stuff out there in that sense?
Yeah, so, man, that was, like, a whole little era of my life working for the marketing department here. And I do kind of... I don't want to be braggy, but I did for about almost 6 years. I worked in a marketing department, and I made it over 800 videos during that time frame for the university. And they're all on our YouTube channel, the university YouTube channel. And that was kind of my pride and joy, was like organizing that, putting it together. But I love it, and I loved it then. I still love it now. I will say, after 800 videos, I started to get a little bit burnt out with it, but I think that's to be expected. So it was nice to be able to move to this position and to be able to teach and not have to do quite as much like with it. But I do still, you know, I've ventured into photography a lot more too, which... I'll make a comment about that. I think being a good photographer makes you a better video maker. And having experience in creating video makes you a better photographer too. So that's just a little side note there. Mm-hmm. So definitely check out photography for anyone out there who, you know, might hear this and they want to improve their skills. Be a good photographer because it'll make you better with video. But aside from that, I do work a little bit on some projects for the university here and there. Not nearly as much as I used to. But, you know, if they need me, I'll step in and do what I can because I do enjoy it.
With photography specifically, before I came here at EGCC, before all that stuff happened, they had me in my digital media design major, made me take photography before anything. Do you think it's good for someone to learn photography if they're just getting into stuff, don't know a lot about video stuff? Because, of course, you're taking still photos, so you learn a lot more about, like, rule of thirds and stuff, and it's easy – well, maybe not easier, but it's a lot more focused on that, like, composition thing than video, like, recording stuff.
Yeah, so, you know, I think about myself in this and how I started. And I started directly into video. I never worked with photography. I mean, I had taken some photos as, you know, when I was young and stuff, and I liked it, but I didn't have any training in it. And so I started making videos, and I look back at videos that I shot when I was, you know, from the age of like 17, 18, 19, 20, up until even when I was like fresh out of college. And before I really started working with photography, my composition was not good in my framing of my shots. And even thinking about just the narrative side of it, like I wasn't as good of a storyteller until I learned how to like use a camera for photography, because in photography, like you said, you really do focus a lot on those foundational elements, and you focus on the compositional values that make up the shot and the frame. And even just like understanding proper exposure in a camera, because, you know, a lot of times we're using DSLR cameras to shoot our video, right? So, I definitely think, like, having that photography background first does help a lot. But it's not to say that you can't be good at it without it. I think you just get better once you do learn it.
Mm-hmm. With, like, kind of going back to your business thing. When I was younger, I lived in Colorado, and there was a big kind of like, I lived right next to a mountain. I would ski consistently.
They have mountains in Colorado?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
When I, like, that was like around the era where I decided, like, oh, I want to do video editing. I really like kind of putting stuff together. And when talking about it with my family, my parents came up with this concept of, if I still live there, which I don't anymore, obviously, of like going out and actively recording, like kind of tourists, like recording them skiing, and they pay me to do that, and then going home and like editing that and sending that as a package. Mm-hmm. I guess kind of, it reminded me a lot of, like, what you were actively doing, just in a more, like, kind of, I guess, Appalachia-related field where, like, people aren't super much skiing, even though it's right. The Appalachian Mountain Range. But, mm-hmm. But yeah, I guess my biggest thing was that, do you think that's a good idea?
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, tourism is – a huge industry, and especially here in West Virginia, and not just in West Virginia, but like in the whole Appalachian region, tourism is huge, and there are, there's people who are working for not only the state, like park systems, because I know that they hire people, and the tourism departments hire people to like create video content, but I do know of like photographers that base themselves in the Canaan Valley area, and they literally, I mean, they'll shoot like weddings and stuff there, but they'll also, if somebody's like having a party or they're going out skiing or they're going rafting or whatever it might be, like these places go out and shoot video for them and create, like you said, little packages of stuff and send it to them. So there's people out there with the money that they want to buy something like that. They want to pay somebody to come capture that moment for them. And so, yeah, you could absolutely do that. I think here in, you know, in Wheeling, we don't quite have that kind of, like those kind of things happening because it's just a different area from the mountains, but where you have like the, you know, really adventurous stuff downstate and stuff. I think definitely there's a niche for that.
Do you think there's like any big kind of like entertainment, like industry kind of like around this area? Kind of like in Colorado, it'd be skiing. In Las Vegas, it'd be like, I don't know, gambling or stuff. Do you think, this is kind of less of related, but also just me questioning me about Appalachia, because even though I've lived here for like 5 years, I still don't know a whole lot. Uh-huh. Is there anything that you would say is like, oh, this is like the big industry that people go out and do, besides like there's industries of like production, like steel mills and stuff like that,
yeah.
But like that's not something that like people can go to and like, oh, I'm going to go hang out at the steel mill.
I'm going to go make videos of steel coming out of a smelting pot. Although that's interesting. And there are, I mean, these companies do hire people to be on staff, like just to have their own creative folks, because there's such a push with, you know, everybody wants a social media presence, not just for advertising, but also for like being good stewards and like showing the community that they're involved and that they do good things. So I think, you know, that's one area. As far as like what is probably a big, I guess, niche area here for production, obviously, as annoying as it is, wedding stuff is huge. There's not very many people doing wedding videos right now, and so I still get all kinds of people contact me about that, and I turn them down. There's some stuff with like, you know, like on the river, like there's the boats and stuff that go down. I had somebody a few years ago, they wanted just like some drone footage of them like driving their boat down the river, and that was it. But they hired me to do that, and I was like, okay, sure, like if you want to pay me to sit on your boat and, you know, go out with you and get a drone shot, sure, I'll do that. But I think, you know, it really exists in almost every industry, like the need for someone to make creative content like that. And one of the big ones is probably real estate, is what I see right now as a really big market for people wanting videos, because people want to have, you know, try to sell houses and move them faster. They want to make them look good. They want to have something that's flashy and catchy they can put on social media and get people to buy the house. And so I see a lot of video being focused on real estate. And I've worked with a couple of different real estate agents to do some side work like that too every now and then.
So this is probably a lot of money in that. I'm mainly asking you so I can come up with business ideas outside of the skiing one I had when I was 10. Oh, yeah. Man, the real estate one is that's probably really good. Though with like the houses around here, I'm not sure if there's like actively selling houses because of like, I guess the economy. But anyways, with like the kind of advertising work and the marketing work that you did here, did you ever see that come to fruition with like seeing like a positive response for it, or even like people being like, oh yeah, this is like what I saw that made me like know about West Liberty?
Yeah, so I think, you know, we live in the age of social media, and social media drives me nuts, and I hate it, and I can't wait for it to go away, but I don't think it's going to. But that's where we really focused a lot of our efforts when I was in marketing, was because that's where the data was saying this is where your prospective audience is, right? We're looking at high school students, we're looking at teenagers, and so social media was a big thing for that. But we were also targeting parents, because parents make a lot of decisions based off of their or students make a lot of their decisions based off their parents' wants and needs and stuff too. And so I definitely saw a pretty good return on what we did for that aspect of, especially the parents seeing it. I don't think the teenagers really cared as much as far as like choosing a college. I do know like we got a lot of views on stuff. Like I would always look at analytics of what we put out there. And our most like common demographic would always be like 40 to like 60 year old women. And so that tells me like moms are really involved in like getting their children to, you know, pursue higher education and looking at things. And so I think it's important that we focused on that too. Probably the best compliment I ever got with any of my work of somebody saying they saw it and it influenced them positively would be our current president, Dr. Borchers. When he came and interviewed, it was right at the end of my I was just finishing up then that contract, and right before I moved to a faculty contract. And he came in to do his interview, and I went up and introduced myself and shook his hand and told him what I did. And he goes, "So you made all the videos that were online?" I said, "Yeah." And he goes, "Oh, good." He goes, "I watched a bunch of those to be able to figure out about West Liberty. They were really helpful." And I was like, "Wow, like, this actually meant something to somebody. Like it was useful, you know, like somebody actually paid attention to it and it served a purpose." But I think that just shows how important it is that we have that here, and that people consider that as a career choice, because it really does have an impact in whatever field that you're in.
With I haven't even thought about it. Like YouTube and stuff, like the places where you put out these advertisements give a lot of statistics about your audience, which is, would you say that's incredibly helpful in specifically marketing, I guess, where you need to first find out who your audience even is, and then make a thing according to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, I think, I mean, when it comes to making the videos, even the things that I made here, I always wanted stuff to be kind of like trendy, especially from maybe like a composition standpoint or even like graphical usage. But as far as like the narrative of it, I never really worried about who my target audience was too much about that, because I just wanted to tell the stories that were authentic to a celebrity. And I think that's where a lot of people get lost, is they try to make something that's too scripted and they do lose that authenticity in the story. So that's a key mark of a really good production person, of a really good storyteller, is being able to find that authentic narrative in whatever they're creating and to be able to show that. So that way, not everything, you might be working on something that's part of the same campaign. Like I was doing like 9 different campaigns whenever I was in marketing, and from like the It's a Major Thing videos where we highlight the majors to like alumni based videos to just faculty videos. They all kind of fit within these like cookie cutter shells, in a sense, but I wanted every single one to be authentic and to be like really, I guess, specific to the person that I was highlighting in it. So it didn't feel like they were just, you couldn't just watch one after the other and it feel the same. They all felt different.
Mm-hmm. Do you think with like specifically like audience engagement with advertising, this is a question I've had for forever, but had no real like idea with it. Do you think it's better to make like a piece of work and then get an audience from there, such as like you posting things and then finding out later that like, oh, this got to like a lot of like 40-year-old women? Or do you think it is good to like have an audience in mind, even if you don't know what that is, and try to go with that, like trying to make like, oh, we're a college, we should probably advertise to like younger people in their like 20s or like 19 and make advertising for that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's a balance of both. And so you definitely do want to know who your audience is, but I think sometimes you'll be surprised of who it actually engages with the most. And there's a lot of times where I would make something targeting a certain area and it would completely flop, but it would be really popular with another demographic. And so that's just, I mean, that's the interesting thing of it, is I think you're allowed to like deviate a little bit from the plan, and not everything's going to turn out perfect, but it's still going to work out in some way, especially as long as you're making good content and you're kind of following those basic rules.
Mm-hmm. So no matter what, like put out something because no matter what, it will reach someone who does enjoy it.
As long as it's a, I firmly believe as long as it's a good video, and don't consider video as just video, think of audio. You know, we talked about this in the DMD 203 class that you were in with me last spring, that poor audio can ruin a really good video. Like, you could have the most beautiful cinematic shots, and if your audio is like crunchy and poorly recorded and poorly edited, it's not going to have the right effect. So, and that's what I like about what we do here at West Liberty in our academic programs, is that we stress the importance of all of those elements to be able to create one really good cohesive work out of it.
With audio specifically, I think it's the one thing I've struggled with the most in like learning about stuff. And I think it's also because, like, do you think a lot, like, everyone kind of has different hearing, so it's hard to, like, properly, like, balance a video? Because there are, like, there are times where I'm, like, showing my friends something online, and they're like, oh, man, that's, like, way too loud. I'm like, it's perfectly, it's, like, perfectly fine. And then I they show me a video, I'm like, this is way too quiet. What are you doing?
Yeah. You know, I mean, everybody does have different sensitivity to it. I think the hardest thing about audio is that you can't see it, you know, and that's when it comes to actually editing it. They, we have visual representations in waveforms and frequencies, you know, if we're working with that. But even though we have those visual representations, it is difficult to, like, wrap. For me, I'm a very visual person, so it's difficult for me to wrap my head fully around audio sometimes. And I think that is the issue that a lot of people have, because we do really experience it a lot differently than we do by seeing the visual aesthetic of what we're doing.
It's something that I've always, like, had a thing with, where I focus a lot on like the editing process of me with the audio, where I kind of set the audio to what helps me edit. And sometimes I think that can be maybe too loud, and then I get stuff like that. Do you think that there, that is, like, it's kind of like the video thing, where there are people who, like, make videos without thinking about the editing process? Do you think that's kind of like a similar problem that people can have?
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because absolutely. I think people get too focused sometimes on the visual part of this and not the auditory part. And that's another trademark of a good storyteller and a good creator, is that they're going to be thinking about those together and equally, right? And so if you're in a room like we're in right now, and you are listening to what's in the room sound, we hear the HVAC going and it just shut off, right? But you hear the, like, those sounds, and you're aware of those and how that's going to end up affecting your audio overall. And then you either, you know, try to get rid of that sound, or you figure out a way that's going to be covered, or you use a type of microphone that's going to, like, you know, not pick that up as much. So yeah, you definitely have to be thinking, like, completely about both of those things to be really good at it.
Speaking about the HVAC system, I've always thought it was incredibly interesting that they put the radio right next to the student union, and also just invited a bunch of kids to kind of run around and scream.
Yeah, there's like 90 little middle schoolers that are running around out there right now. So, but at least they're seeing us doing this. Maybe they'll be like, hey, I want to do that someday.
Though they are, like, kind of like down the hall.
Yeah.
And I think they probably just kind of left.
Come study video production here.
And yeah, with, like, I still talking about audio stuff, there's, oh, and, like, with, like, it seems like with everything that you've said, being, like, a good video producer kind of relates to knowing basically every step of it along the way. It's not, like, kind of like if you're working at a factory, you can just understand, like, what makes your line work. Like, you flatten out the metal and then you don't really have to worry about it. But with, like, a creative production, it's good to know all the steps. Do you think that's why, like, I guess, like, directors or stuff like that are on the top of that because they are the ones that have to focus on, like, every step and be like, this is what I want from this step and this is what I want from this step. And do you think that's why, like, they get so much?
Definitely. And, you know, nobody usually starts out as a director right away. Mm-hmm. Nobody usually starts out, like, as a full producer right away. Like, you have to work through these different levels up through, especially in, like, you know, the film industry and areas like that. But, yeah, it is so vital that you are skilled or at least like exposed to all these different facets of production, and have understanding and appreciation of them. And that's one of the things that I try to stress like with my classes. By the way, are you in advanced editing?
I think I've been confirmed next semester I'm going to be in advanced editing.
Okay, good. So in advanced editing, you know, that's where we take those foundational skills from the intro editing class and we start to think a little bit more about that in the advanced editing is how everything really is going to work together to create this, you know, fully robust piece that we're working on. So yeah, that's what we really try to push here. So good point.
Like, yeah, and it makes me kind of appreciate going into a major like this more, where there are some times where like, man, do I really need to focus on every like step of this and like have to take all these things? And yeah, in a creative process, even if it's working on like a non like fiction piece, like where it's just like a show, like an interview show, mm-hmm. There is still a creative process there, and you need to look at like every step, like. Here I need to focus on the switcher and this, and I have mm-hmm. to think about the questions and the like writing of those questions and the delivery of it. And in order to make like a creative work, you can have like a specific part you specialize in, but it's good to keep in mind. It's incredibly good to keep in mind what everyone else is doing with that.
Yeah.
Do you think there is, like, maybe a problem of people... I mean, we kind of discussed this earlier, but I guess I'm curious because you're someone who's actively, like, worked with other people and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I've mainly just worked with other students who are nice. But as someone currently in, like, the workforce with retail, I know that sometimes working with other people...
Oh,
like,
people are the worst.
Yeah.
Like, retail especially.
Have you ever had stuff where there was like complications of like this person who's in this specific field is not listening to me, even though I'm like, hey, we should like work together in that, like in the actual like money making field.
Totally. Yeah. You know, I think it happens. Unfortunately, it happens a lot. And generally those people who aren't like holding up their end or they are bringing the entire production down in some way, it's because that they don't think big picture wise. They're not thinking about the full, they're thinking about their part. That's like a line worker. They're only thinking about flattening the metal. They're not thinking mm-hmm. about how that metal is going to be incorporated into the bigger piece later. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is an issue though with production is, you know, if people aren't thinking about how it's all going to come together, even if they're not a director, what their part is going to be in this, then it's definitely, going to hurt the entire thing. And I've been lucky. I mean, I've worked in different areas outside of here that I've worked in, like multi-crew productions. It's been really good. So I don't really have any horror stories of anything. So I guess I'm lucky for that. But I will say I have worked with clients that, kind of like in retail, I have worked with clients who don't understand the process and have given me some issues with, mm-hmm. you know, oh, you're not doing this way. Why do you do it this way? And it's like, that's how we do it, you know? Mm-hmm. So
with clients and stuff like that, I've heard a lot of stories about like people in our field where they talk to a client and they're like, hey, this is how this stuff will look good. But the client has already in their head made their own vision of a thing. And the most I can relate it to is people coming up to my register and they already have a discount that they made up in their head. And they talk to me like, well, isn't it supposed to be this? And I was like, no, you read it wrong. And they go, well, I still think it should be this. It's like, okay, I guess you're right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it happens a lot. I think one of the areas where I have probably people give me the most grief about things is like with music. Mm-hmm. Especially like back in the day when I was doing wedding videos, because, you know, legally you can't take like a pop song and put it onto a wedding video without paying licensing to be able to do that. And so I work with a couple different licensing vendors online, like library sites that I license stuff from. So I use really specific music that is not like popular music or anything, but it works really well for the wedding videos. But I'll have people sometimes say, well, instead of that song, can you put the song in? I'm like, are you going to pay me $1,000 to license that song? Because if you are, yeah, I will. But otherwise, no, you know? And so, yeah, there's definitely people who don't understand it sometimes make it a little more difficult.
Mm-hmm. With that stuff, is it like specifically like it's an issue of like, okay, if you were making this video yourself, you can put whatever, because you're not a person like who is in a business making money off this, but as someone like who is like making money off this video I'm making for you, I can't do that. Do you think it's like an understand, like a misunderstanding of people being like, of you being like, hey, this is like a job that I have that mm-hmm. like I legally there is stuff that I can't do.
Right. Yeah, like if I, you know, if I put I don't know who's a popular artist that people are going to know right now. I want to say if I put like a Garth Brooks country song, because I used to like older country, you know. But if I put like a Garth Brooks song on something and I sell that to that person, then technically I'm responsible for paying the licensing for that Garth Brooks song. And if I didn't do that, I could get sued, you know, mm-hmm. and it affect me. So, yeah, I think it's just if they want to change it out later, up to them. Technically, legally, like they're still not supposed to do that, but mm-hmm. at least there's no money exchange at that point. So
yeah, because I think the most if they replace it themselves, the most they can do is like if they post it on social media, it can be taken mm-hmm. down as like a claim.
Yeah,
but they aren't making money off it, so there is like there's a thing of like, oh, they
there's
can
some gray area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that gray area gets a lot less gray when you're actively making money off
100%,
it.
100%. Yeah.
And a big thing that we learn here is like worrying about those licensings mm-hmm. and stuff. Except like West Liberty pays some like licensing stuff. And so Chris Lee lets us play
BMI.
A bunch of stuff over.
Yep.
Have you ever like made like, I guess, a mistake like afterwards, either licensing wise or just like any mistake in general, where you see it like afterwards and you're like, oops, I kind of messed up there, but like since maybe you're a smaller business, it didn't matter. That's a very specific question, yeah. But it's just a scenario I kind of made up in my head and was curious
gotcha.
About.
No, so that's one thing I've always been really careful about, and I honestly was taught that when I was a student here at West Liberty, is to really be cautious about the copyright infringement. I have posted, like I have used some music that I've licensed from, because I use Audioblocks mm-hmm. As one of my primary licensing libraries. And there have been times where I have posted something from there on YouTube and then it gets flagged because YouTube just didn't recognize the licensing with it. And so I have to go through and submit the paperwork to them saying like, you know, here's the licensing information. So like it's not been a bad thing, but it has like flagged my videos. And of course, you know, when you're working in that area, like on YouTube, you don't want to get too many flags because then they could deactivate your account. So, anytime I get anything like that, I take it very seriously because I don't want my account to be taken down.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's a lot of like creators out there and YouTubers that are, you know, they've had accounts lost because they've had too many copyright infringements. And usually it's not intentional. Sometimes it's just, in my case, it was literally not my fault. I've already paid for licensing, mm-hmm. but they just didn't have that paper trail of it or whatever. But it's gotten better in like the recent years because you can like, link your like my Audioblocks account. I have linked to my YouTube account, so anytime I post to it now, they automatically see I have an Audioblocks account, and if it matches up with that piece of music on there, it's good.
That's really interesting because I've seen people in that field like complain about like that, and I didn't even like recognize like I didn't know there's a way to kind of submit your license to YouTube, and that seems like really helpful
mm-hmm.
and. Frankly, you would think a lot more. A lot more YouTubers who like actively license stuff. Now, I'm guessing like more like richer ones, like Mr. Beast, they probably have their own licensing thing, but they also probably have their own teams that make music because he's a mm-hmm. narcissist. and yeah, with stuff like that, like, I wonder if under, like, the West Celebrity thing, you can post, like, really, like, half the stuff, kind of like what we do on with the licenses, Chris Lee, yeah,
stuff,
talks
yeah.
about, like, if we could, like, post, like, what we could quote-unquote get away with, even though it's legal.
Right. There's some variations in it, and there is a differentiator between, like, what you post online and what goes over the airwaves. So that's always a tough area to make sure that you're abiding by correctly, too.
Mm-hmm.
Because just because you have licensing for over the airwaves, you might not have licensing then for online usage.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that was something that we had, like, as in my marketing position here, and I was creating content, I had to always make sure everything that I licensed was being licensed for the correct purpose. And if, like, I was making a commercial for the university and it was going to broadcast on Channel 7 or Channel 9, I had to make sure that the licensing either A, covered it, or if it didn't, then I have to get the additional licensing to cover that part as well as the online usage. So, yeah, there's lots to it.
Does West Liberty have, like, I mean, you just talked about this, but, yeah, does West Liberty have, like, both the broadcasting and, like, the streaming and, like, also, like, the online, like, stuff, the licenses for all those? Or is it only the ones that, like, we have the license here for the radio station, we have the license for over there, and then we try not to
I think the, like, the TV station and radio station, I believe, is all combined under the ASCAP BMI licensing. Now, for our web stuff, like, when I was making content, I had separate, like, our web stuff wasn't covered under that, so I had to do additional library licensing for that. And there were different sites that we would use, like Audioblocks was one that I used, and then Soundstripe was another big one I used for a long time.
Do you think that those license holders should, like, the way that, like, this and the broadcasting on noise violation thing are under kind of the same thing? Do you think they should, like, offer that for web, since, like, web is such a big major thing now? Or is there different, like, laws where they kind of can do that?
It all varies under what's covered under the, like, the licensing. It's really, honestly, like, if you really want to get a good job someday, get a Juris Doctorate in copyright law, because it's needed, because there's so much confusion out there of what's legal, what's not, what's covered, what isn't. And, you know, there's fine print on these sites that you license from that is 30 pages long, and I never read it. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to read the whole thing, and most people don't. But I think just having that general understanding of it is the important part, and making sure that that you're never intentionally trying to violate any of those.
Mm-hmm.
And again, as a good content creator, that's going to be something that you understand and that you are doing.
Mm-hmm. With, like, businesses that, like, do, like, maybe even, like, larger ones, do you think it is important to either A, understand it yourself, or B, hire someone that understands it a lot more? And do you think you'll get a lot farther? Like, it's costly because you're hiring a whole other person whose job is just looking at copyright law, but it's worth it because you get to make stuff that doesn't get actively flagged or stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. And, like, you know, companies that make like commercials and things for large companies, they have a staff of people that's checking all that. And so, and it would be cool to, you know, I've always thought, like, man, it'd be really cool to work for a larger production team or a larger agency. And I think going back to what we started talking about of being, you know, just understanding how it all works, because if you're in that position where you're working with a large team, you're not responsible for everything.
Mm-hmm.
You're responsible for your part. So you're kind of like one of those people working on a line at that point. But you have to appreciate and you have to understand how it all works together, so that way it's helping the whole team be better. And so, you know, I've never worked on a big crew or a big team or anything like that. I do think it'd be kind of fun, but also I like doing everything. Mm-hmm. And, I think it's cool to be able to look at something in the end and be like, yeah, I did most of that or all of that.
Do you think, cause this is something I struggled with. I worked on a podcast at, my high school, the Jefferson County JVS, and I did, like, all of like the editing because I wanted to do more editing. Yeah. But then it felt like I had to do I understood the steps of everything, so I was like, I might as well do it this so it works well with my editing. Do you think like that understanding of everything also comes with a want of like, okay, well, if I understand all this, why don't I just do it myself? And then kind of like a struggle of working with a team with that.
It does. And I think I'm a really bad delegator. Like, I guess I have some control like issues in my life. But yeah, I mean, I'm that way. I at least want to be able to have some stock in everything just mm-hmm. to be able to, I guess it helps me take more pride in it. And then in the end, if something doesn't turn out the way it's supposed to, I have no one to blame but myself. So I can't be mad at anybody else. But yeah, it does. Are you like that too? Like you like to, yeah.
Very actively. Anytime I am making a work, mm-hmm. I will be like, all right, well, I need to try to help film. And then like, I should set it up this way so it's better when editing. and also I understand it and like no one's volunteering. And then it's like, okay, I should also edit. And then it's like, okay, I want to edit this entire thing and also make the graphics and also all this stuff. I want to make this graphic for this idea I have in this specific way that I want it.
But let somebody else edit the audio, right? Yeah. We'll let somebody else handle it.
With audio, I kind of am like, all right, I'm going to ear. Well, because like the people I'm working with also didn't really understand how audio stuff works. So I was like, I guess I'm the only one to. But that would be the one thing I'd be like, okay, I want someone else to do this. You think that's how like directors are made of just people that are like, I want this and this and this. And they're like, okay, why don't I just direct this and tell people?
Yeah, they have control issues too. They want to be in charge. But and it's a good thing. And again, you want a good director who respects and understands all the areas of it. So that's why it's important, I think, to have experience and start out low and work your way up with it.
Something that I've been looking very much into, one of my favorite shows, and the creator, Vince Gilligan, and he's like the director and producer of like shows like Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul. And a big thing I've noticed with him is that there is a humility. He understands that it requires like a whole, I think he put it as like, it requires like a whole like town to put in like the work of a thing. And so he, every time he's in an interview, he mentions quite literally like almost everyone that's worked on it, like the costume designers. He invites like everyone to a thing. And yeah, do you think it's important to have that humility of like, okay, I'm not the one person working on this. I'm the one with like a vision that is having this entire town of people make it.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, if it's something that has that level where you do have that many people, and you know, you mentioned like costume designers. Sometimes in production, we don't even think about the people who are, you know, the art directors, the set builders, the people who are like putting the electric in for stuff to work. If we're, you know, doing something on set. Like there are so many people involved, and so yeah, like you have to be able to realize that this wouldn't happen, and your film, your video, whatever you're creating would not look as good if it wasn't for those people too. So yeah, you have to be willing to give credit where credit's due and appreciate folks for sure.
And like with that, it's people putting a bunch of work, and like since they're specializing in that work, they're able to put a lot more detail as if you're doing everything yourself. And so in all, it makes kind of a larger, better piece in that sense. And that's like probably why that humility is so good, because these people are making, they are specializing in a bunch of stuff that you couldn't even do, like totally. And put as much work as in. And yeah, I think we went a while, so I think that's going to wrap it up. Thank you, Jared, so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Again, I'm Peyton. This has been the Distinctive Discussion on WGLZ 91.5 with Jared Thompson, Assistant Professor for Digital Media and Design here at West Liberty. We are College Radio, and we are passionately vocal. Up next is Big Truck Boys by Mystical.